Thank you very much. I just want to make a comment. It appears as if there's a new clock back here. I mean, it looks like it's new, and both clocks are the same time, so we have cause to celebrate just on that alone. So thank you, Carlos. Right on, buddy. So we're calling this meeting to order, and if we would all rise and join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, it's our good fortune that all members of the board are here and ready to roll. Mr. Carmel, do we have anything to report from closed session?
No, the board continued to provide direction to its labor negotiators regarding the IAF MOU and continue to evaluate the performance of the general manager. But
cool.
Nothing to report.
Do we have any agenda reviews, any additions or deletions? Yes, Director Rice.
I'd like to pull the item 6D, no, sorry, 6C from the agenda. The staff report was incomplete, and I'd really like for directors to have the full information before we have our discussion, because we didn't have the final document for staff to include for some reason.
Okay, well, I'm assuming...
I would like to request we move G up in the order. I'm okay with having it anywhere, you know, higher up on the list, because I am only going to be able to stay until 4:30 today.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll be done by then, but... So does anyone have any suggestions as to when we'd like to move, where we'd like to move item G? Since we're not doing the review of bylaws, we'll just move it up to there, I guess, huh? Move G up to C? Is that all right?
That works
for
me.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right. So
we're going to delay C until next week. Will we be ready next week?
We should be ready next week, as long as we can get a meeting with staff between. I know the agenda packet has to be ready tomorrow, but we need to have a meeting with staff so we get the right information in the agenda.
I know personally I won't be available tomorrow, and probably Monday would be too late. Is that correct, staff?
Monday's a holiday.
Oh, Monday's a holiday. Well,
yeah.
Good for you. So perhaps you might have to put it off until March.
Okay.
How does staff feel?
I'd say we probably could use some more time.
Okay.
I think next week might be pressing with a short week.
All right.
And publishing. Okay. We could do it, but the overall report would be uploaded as a new attachment, you know, sometime short before the board meeting. That's not great.
If there's a consensus on the board that March is okay, that we can operate under our current bylaws to that point, and then have a fuller discussion of concerns and questions. Just so everyone knows, what was included is essentially the notes that I put together for our ad hoc meeting the first time that we met. So.
All right. Well, then tentatively we will put this on the first meeting and on the agenda for the first meeting in March.
Thank you, President Farmer.
Thank you. And I do want to mention, by the way, for anybody that has taken a look at the item so far, Director Rice did a lot of work on upgrading the bylaws, and we'll be taking a closer look at her work next month. So... moving forward to item number two, acknowledgments, and I think I'll just hand this off to Mr. D'Anzo. Why not, Ray?
Thank you, Director Farmer and Board. I'm Ray D'Enzo, Utilities Manager for our Utilities Department. As I've said last month, I'm fortunate to work with a team of professional water and wastewater operators that not only approach their work professionally, but approach their work with a lot of care and ownership. On this occasion, I want to acknowledge, we want to acknowledge, one of our wastewater operators, Tony Artho, who demonstrated some initiative coupled with ingenuity. And the acknowledgement specifically that I want to make note of is when we first received the Vactor truck, he took the time to walk around and do the punch list and realized that there were a lot of things that were missing and a lot of things that were added that didn't belong. So he revised that punch list. And not only that, in addition, he created a punch list of his own that created a monthly report and a good annual report to go by. And in addition, when the Vactor rep came and did some training with us, he was so impressed with Tony's list that he wanted to receive that list because he wants to use it now for his punch list for the entire Western region. So kudos to Tony for not only showing the initiative, but showing the foresight and ingenuity to make something of value even more valuable. So I want to acknowledge Tony, and he wants to say a few words, too. So.
Thank you. I'd like to say thank you to the board for putting together and providing the funding for this new Vactor. It makes our life much better, and it's highly appreciated by the whole crew, and I'm sure it's going to be highly appreciated by the whole community. We've already been doing our rounds. I do want to say a couple of things to everybody in the community. The Vactor works great, and it's doing its job. It is a big vehicle, so we are going through on some tight streets, and it's going to hold up, and we've been very appreciative to the community on giving us space to work. There are a couple of issues that go along with the Vactor. When we run our lines, we're blowing high-pressure water through the pipes, and we go upstream. And when we're pulling back, sometimes this is going to bubble your toilets, which people have seen. Other issues that happen is it creates a vacuum on the lateral lines, so it can pull the water out of all your P-traps, and this can lead to escaping sewer gas into your house. So if you start to get smells, go around and open up your taps for 15 seconds, fill up the P-traps on all your plumbing fixtures. And that should resolve that issue. And this is another thing is this is when you get to be a good neighbor. And if you have a neighbor out of town or something, we don't want to have direct sewer gas. So if you have a neighbor that you know is out of town, maybe contact that neighbor and say they have gone through these streets. And we've had, you might want to run the tap on your water. That way you don't come to a smelly house when they come back off of vacation or whatever. So those are the two items that I'd like to say. We are currently we're training two of us. So there are three people usually around the vehicle with other people. That's because everybody's kind of in training, getting used to a bigger vehicle, more powerful vehicle. And the intent is to get all the lines or as many lines clean this year as possible. Thank you very much for all your support.
Tony. Oh. Tony, I admire your endeavors at public speaking and speaking to the audience here, but you know the folks at home might have missed you on the microphone, so could you repeat that again, please? It's just a joke. I think they probably caught it, but anyway. But thank you for your good work, Tony, and all the staff out there at Wastewater. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to item three, the PROS Commission's report, and Steve Niffen is in the building. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon. How is everybody? I am fabulous. I have a transfer pitcher that can throw BBs and hit bullets to the fence, so I am happy. I don't know about you guys, but it's baseball season.
Steve's a Dodger fan.
And we've got Mookie Blaylock, so that's good, too. Mookie or Bettis, yeah. Awesome. A couple of things to talk about is the skate park. I don't know if Carlos has clued everybody in, but it looks like the new plan, at least on the horizon for the skate park, is going with a mini soccer situation over there with some mini goals and play soccer. I want to say indoor soccer. It's not indoor soccer because it's outside, but it's on the smaller, you know, shorter walls, and they don't slide tackle and the whatnot, and they can actually play on concrete. It's not an abnormal thing. He's gotten a great response from that. So we're very excited moving forward with that. That'll be something that we're talking about, relatively inexpensive to other things that we have talked about. If you absolutely hate that idea, go ahead and throw that out there. We haven't heard that from anybody yet, so we're kind of happy moving forward with that. The other thing is we're working on the bathroom still at the East Ranch. We're in the process of filling out a little beautification grant from the county, the Board of Supervisors, some money they've got that they float around, and we're trying to get a little bit of that for just planning of the bathroom so that we'll be ready to get some funding for that when that comes about. We talked about the foundation for the Vets Hall and putting that together. That's a little further out there and scares everybody a little bit more, but there has been talk amongst some of the fraternal organizations in town about dealing with that. So some of those groups, I'm sure, would be more specific on that. Other than that, I'll take any questions, I think.
Right. Any questions for Mr. Niffen from the board?
Awesome. Right on. You guys have a good day. Thanks.
Well, hold on, Steve. Steve, hold on just a second. I did get a request to speak on this item from Ms. Dickinson. So you might want to. Am I right, Katina? Okay. So
yeah.
Why don't you just come on up to the microphone, and I'm sure Steve will be more than happy to hear what you have to say.
Tina Dickinson, Cambria. Some months ago, Mr. Niffen mentioned in one of his presentations, or one of his reports, I should say, that on the East Ranch, they are sort of planning, or they have plans to have a children's playground. And I sort of questioned that in my mind because we have a lovely children's playground at Shamel Park. So with great equipment, over the years, the county has updated that equipment. And so I was thinking, why do we need to spend money from ratepayers, Cambria ratepayers, when the county is doing a great job of having a children's playground available? That's one. And then the second one that seems to be creating quite a buzz in this town is over a swimming pool that was first by a group, a nonprofit group called Cambrians for Aquatics, and they talked to the high school apparently about it, and then they are now in communication with the county, with Mr. Franco of County Parks. So I put in I asked for the letter from Coast Unified School District to Cambrians for Aquatics, dated September 13th, 2018. I just received that today. And I think that the committee for the Board of Trustees, the Board of Coast Union High School, made it quite clear that for various reasons, cost being at that time a huge factor with hooking up to a sewer line with the district, also archaeological site that would have to be investigated. And so the idea now is to go to Shamel Park. It is creating much division in our community, and quite frankly, we have to just sort of see how many millions CFA can raise. But then, of course, there will be an EIR, and that will be problematic, I suspect. So my hope is that CFA might be kind of really looking for another location. It does not seem, from speaking to the president of the board, Mr. Shalhoub, and Mr. McFarland, another member of the board, that it would be feasible at any time at the high school. So a lot of people were hoping that to be the case, but apparently it is not. They're putting in solar panels at some point on part of that property, but there are other areas of the property that they plan to use. But they're very concerned about maintenance, insurance, liability, and that also was raised in the letter, but also with Mr. McFarland in a phone call that I had with him. So those are my comments. I'd like to hear back from Mr. Niffen about why we need a playground at the rodeo grounds, but also why can't we have a pool there? That is the great big park that we've been paying for, and why would that not be a consideration? Thank you.
Thank you. Steve, you wish to respond?
Well, it would be more comfortable for me to respond at a PROS meeting because I would be able to be a little bit more frank and not as professional. But, yeah, we're going to have a playground at the park. That's why you have a park, so you can have a playground for the kids to play on. You can't have too many slides and swings for kids to play on. But the caveat to that is I'm pretty sure I don't have to have the rate payers pay for the play structure. I'm pretty sure I can get money for that. We've just got to get the bathroom in place so that we can have the play structure. And the play structure will probably be first. And not to be sarcastic, but yes, it will be an eyesore. Because it will be a slide and bars, swings and stuff. But that's good for us. That's good for us as a culture and a society because kids are not playing. Kids are down two-thirds in Cambria. All the teams in Cambria are down two-thirds because they're not playing. Now, some of that's because kids left, but a lot of that's because of the iPhone. So anything we can do to make kids play, or grown-ups for that matter, we believe is good, at least from the Parks and Rec. As far as the pool goes, I don't really want to weigh in on the pool. All we're trying to do is if people want to do stuff, we want to help people do stuff. We haven't bitten off any more of that concept than just listening more and trying to help facilitate the conversation. And so I'm going to hesitate to say, but I will. The park location there seems tough, granted, for all those reasons. The high school seems good to the regular people of us, but that's quite a difficult location if you're that particular district. They don't want to be having that boondoggle around their neck either, necessarily, with all the stuff that goes on. And the Fiscalini Ranch seems like a normal place that might go, but the CCNRs don't allow for that over there. So that's why it can't be over there. So if it can't be in all three locations, then at some point it's going to have to be at some place that it can't be, if it can happen. Right, and I keep saying if they have $10 million or $20 million or some god-awful amount of money that we can't deny, like the pickleball people, right? Boom, pickleball people had money. Boom, that thing was done. So if they had $10 million and they wanted to build their own pool, where would you put it? And I think further away from the ocean than closer to the ocean is a good idea, but there you go. Do I have to say any more? I've got
Steve, I think you nailed it on the wall, buddy. And you know, you came up with the theme for the PROS Commission while you were talking there. We help people do stuff. I think that's what you said there. All right. So thank you, Steve, and I hope that was an adequate answer for Ms. Dickerson and anybody else who was interested. All right, moving on to Director Rice.
Oh, I just wanted to add that we do have a plan for a park on the east part of the ranch that was done quite a few years ago to make it into a park, and that there will be no ratepayer money going to that because ratepayer money only goes to water and wastewater and not to our parks. Our parks are funded through grants, if we get them, and through property taxes.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. All right, now moving on to item 4 and public safety. And we have a special report from our fire chief, Chief Hollingsworth.
Good afternoon, President Farmer, board. Thank you for inviting me here today. I was asked to come and do a quick review synopsis of an incident that occurred a couple of weeks ago in regards to the opening of the emergency road access And I wanted to say thank you for that, because I think it's a great opportunity for us to take a couple of minutes just to educate and inform the community from an external component, and then also internally to review our internal controls and policy and everything else, because we can always have an opportunity for improvement. That being said, I really want to focus on what the opportunities are that have occurred out of this, but to do so, I think it's important everybody's on the same page to understand what occurred. So on the early morning of the 27th, there was a series of power lines that went down on Windsor Boulevard, real close to Heath Lane. Typically, when power lines go down, the way the system is designed is that the system tries to re-energize itself, and if it can't do that after a period of time, it automatically shuts off. That doesn't always work. And in this scenario, it did not, which meant the power lines were actively arcing and burning into the flora, the fauna, the trees, the roadway, making it a situation that was immediately dangerous to life and health. We take that very seriously, and unfortunately, the best course of action at that point is to shut the road down. In any other area of town, this would not be a big deal. It happens all the time in this community, secondary to trees and lines going down. Unfortunately, this is the one area in town where we have one road access into that subdivision, if you will. Additionally, we were kind of something that was stacked against us and was in regards to time and response issues. When this occurs, PG&E is normally notified at the same time we are. So it is not uncommon to have them on scene within about 20 minutes of when we arrive, close the roads. They'll isolate the closest shutoff switches, and they'll secure the power lines, enabling us to reopen the roads for the community. And then they'll go back and fix the lines at their leisure without the danger being present. There was almost an hour and a half delay in getting PG&E on scene. We're still trying to figure out why that was the case. We're trying to do that through back channels, but quite frankly, I don't know that we're going to get a solid answer as to why that occurred. Regardless, the Park Hill area was isolated for about an hour and a half. And it did have that extended on scene time. A member of the community approached the staff and asked if they can open the access road. Because of the incident occurring and unfolding the way it was, they were dedicated to making sure that people were staying out of the power lines. There were numerous people that tried to drive through the incident. There were numerous people that tried to walk through the incident. Inherently dangerous at all times, and it, from a safety standpoint, we could not peel anybody away from that. That's not to say that if there wasn't a critical need, we couldn't have made that happen, but at the time, they were dedicated to the incident. So the direction was given to that time, to that person who asked, is if you feel it's that important, go open it and get out, but this is not an emergency right now. This is really just a temporary road closure. Looking at this from an after-action incident report concept, firefighters take a lot of pride in their level of professionalism, training, and how they approach all this stuff. And in doing so, we almost always do an after-action report. It's something really common in this field. It's very common in law enforcement. It's common in the military. And we review everything after the fact. And so everything from the simplest medical aid to the most significant fire, we look at for the opportunities for improvement. That being said, it's important to understand that there is policy in place that dictates the use of this road. There are decision-making processes in how it's supposed to be activated and how it's supposed to be used. And successfully, even though this incident didn't unfold exactly how we wanted to, it's important to realize that the incident was mitigated, nobody was injured, the ranch was opened independently with the permission of the officer on scene, and people left successfully, and nothing was damaged, and there was no other problem. The ranch was resecured, and it was a fairly isolated incident with very few people that went across. What's important to realize in looking at it from the opportunity standpoint is now we have the opportunity to go back and look over the last couple of weeks and looked at all the different variables and stuff that occurred in this process. And one of the most important things is education. I've had the opportunity to meet with members of your board, with our administrative department. I have had two or three meetings now with CERT leaders and met extensively with Carlos as part representative for the ranch, and also in discussions with the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch and how they do things, to look at every component of this that we possibly could to make sure that we're addressing all the potential issues as we move forward. And one of the most important things that we have to realize here is education. Education not only for our own personnel, but for the community at large. And it's important to realize that although this was an inconvenience, this was not by definition emergency. And so what we typically do is we close roads secondary to these type of problems, and it's important to realize that there's normally another way around that. And so looking at this, expecting PG&E to be on scene within the 20 or 30 minute time frame we normally are given, it's really just an inconvenience to have that road closed. Because it was took much longer, that's why there was some concerns that happened here. And I think it's important to realize and also inform people that if there was a true emergency beyond that of the incident that was occurring, the decision to open the road would have happened immediately by policy, and we would have followed the steps that typically go along with that. It is, that road was developed with the permission of the Coastal Commission and to be used in the abundance of caution at all times. It's not a regular access road. It's not something that's to be used frivolously by any means. It's used regularly by a number of the people in the community, including myself, that like to hike out there. People take their dogs out there. There's a gentleman that I see on a regular basis in his powered wheelchair. I'm not sure if he's walking his dog or his dog is walking him, but they're out having a very good time. It's inherently dangerous when we put vehicles on that road. So specifically with why the road was developed, it's not something that is opened frivolously or without thought. It's important to realize that by policy and by the way this road was developed, the order and permission for that road to be opened falls solely to that of the fire chief at the current time and the way this is designed. There are a number of things we can decide to do in that regard to make sure that that happens, but we work very closely with the other people that and other agencies and departments that have reasons to be out there. Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch are out there frequently doing regular maintenance. They have a right and responsibility to be out there. Other departments within the CCSD are out there regularly, both water and wastewater. Carlos is on the ranch daily. If there was something I could say more often than daily, I would say that, but he's out there frequently doing his job. And so there's a lot of people that are out there on a regular basis, and they have the right to be out there and the responsibility. One of the opportunities we realized in this is creating better internal controls in regards to locks and keys. We know exactly how many locks there are to access the ranch. There's 5. We know exactly how many keys were initially developed. We know how many additional fire locks that are used in the committee. There's 12. In the community, excuse me, there's 12. We know how many keys that were initially issued with all that. This is in excess of 15 to 16 years. And in the process of doing that, the keys and the locks, the locks have not numbered, but the proliferation of keys is possibly exponential, and we don't know exactly how many are out there. That being said, we have realized that the fire locks, out of convenience, have been started to be used for other things, like access to the ranch, and the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch are given the keys to that, without fully realizing or anticipating that those same locks are now used for other critical infrastructure things within the CCSD. And with all due respect, the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch shouldn't have access to those components or vice versa, depending on where those locks are. All that to be said, we're addressing that immediately by recalling every key that we can find by policy. We're addressing that by bringing all the keys in talking to the CERT leaders and to Carlos and his staff and reaching out to the other department heads within the CCSD, because we're going to be recalling those keys as well. We have already purchased and acquired a series of locks that are multi-stage, and they're color-coded. So Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch are going to be issued black locks with specific keys that you cannot duplicate. All the fire emergency locks are going to be red, so we can actually isolate and reduce who has access to what, and we can better quantify who's got the keys out there. All the keys are going to be enumerated. That way I know that, President Farmer, if I issue you key 01, it's yours until I take it back. And if it's ever found in the community, then we know that there was an issue. So that's not to say you would give it away, but that's the level of controls that we're putting in on this at this point. We've had the opportunity to update policy with CERT. Well, let me back up a second. We've had opportunity to update policy internally for the fire department on how we respond and what we do. There was policy in place. I finished the update on that and clarified how this is supposed to be utilized. That's internal and operational. We've had the opportunity to meet with CERT and develop new policy for them. One of the nice things about this is to realize this is not something that would, like as I said, would be frivolously done. if the decision to use the ranch is used for evacuation purposes or some other long-term type of event, it's not just going to be open and walked away. We have people on CERT that are qualified in traffic control. They will be the ones that are directed to actually open and staff continuously until it is closed. So we have people at each entrance where vehicles are going to be allowed. We will limit traffic usually to one way only because we have serious concerns about the safety of people on the ranch. And then the road really isn't wide enough to get people side by side. And if you get off of that, not only can you get stuck, but you can hinder traffic and you can harm the environment. And we don't want to do any of those things in this process. So it's important to realize that the policies with our CERT team are to enhance the effective use of that road if needed. And it would be continuously staffed. We've noticed opportunities for improvements to notification for staff to make sure that my command officers that are empowered to act for me in these incidents, if I'm not here for some reason, have the authority to make the decision to open that road based on the criteria in the policy. And just to clarify, if anybody's wondering, people can be out there for a number of routine things from other departments, whether it is regular working stuff, training for the fire department. But typically, if we're talking about opening for public use, it's going to be secondary to some kind of emergent event, whether it's earthquake, flooding, wildfire, some other kind of natural man-made desire. The possibility by policy does exist for us to a catch-all category, if you will, to be able to open it for some kind of long-term event, whether it is expected or unexpected. So in this scenario, for instance, if PG&E had gotten there and said, we're having some kind of critical infrastructure problem and it's going to be closed for the next 6 hours, we would evaluate that at that point. And that would be a appropriate time to use that gate because the inconvenience surpasses what would be the norm. We have also opportunities to improve notifications within our organization itself, how they're supposed to notify me, who I'm supposed to notify, whether that's the general manager, which he does need to be notified. He would then turn around at his discretion and notify the board or other members of administrative staff. And Carlos would be notified immediately by me as well because he specifically oversees that. And it's important that he knows that those people potentially would be on the ranch. And lastly, it's important that we notice the opportunity to how to notify the public. Now, it's not our specific responsibility to call everybody and say, by the way, a power line went down, this road is closed. However, in the lack of anybody else being able to do that, it does somewhat fall to the fire department. So we're exploring every option we possibly can at this point to figure out how to get that information out there, because it would be helpful if somebody could be able to know that when they get up and find that they can't get to where they're going. We've talked about being able to put this up on the CCSD website, on our 24/7 NCEP website. We've talked about using the CERT Facebook. We've also talked about using Nextdoor to get information out there. All of those are appropriate, and we will make efforts to endeavor to do all of that because it would be very helpful. The difficulty in that is all of those take time. It's not a one-stop shop to get all that information out there. The most probable and appropriate way to get this information out there is to use one of two systems that we're looking into right now. We're aggressively looking at an alert notification system for the community. This would be similar to the signs you see when you travel, when you drive down the road and there's a flashing light that says if it's flashing, or there's not a flashing, if it's flashing, tuned to 7:10 a.m. for some kind of information about what's going on. We would have the ability to tap into that system and load either some kind of preloaded message, or we can make it user identified to say this road is closed for this reason. This would be continuously broadcast on a loop through our AM system. So even if cell phones went down and everything else went down, AM radio should still be working. So the idea is to be able to get that out there as quick as possible. The other option for us, which would be excellent, is a program called Nixle. And a lot of people in the community have already downloaded this. This is a smart app, very similar to PulsePoint, but works a little bit differently. And it allows us to send emergency notification for these kinds of events. But right now it's limited because we are using currently the free version, which means I can only hack into, if you want to let me use that term, use that for some kind of emergent event that hits a certain threshold of need within the community. I can't just randomly send out something on Nextel that says, the intersection of Art and Birth is closed. It doesn't hit that threshold. I could send out something saying it's time to evacuate and everybody needs to go because that does meet the threshold. This directly connects with the IPAWS system, if you're familiar with that. Most people understand what Amber Alerts are, and Amber Alerts are used go through an IPAWS system. It's the Integrated Public Alert and Awareness System. This program will allow, based on the level of severity, the user to be able to get into IPAWS and send that kind of alert out to people, even if they're not using Nixle. That's the key to that. So you can download Nixle, you can get all these information updates as we send them out, but even if you don't have the ability to do that, we could still hit everybody's cell phone. And so that's the level of information and getting things out there to the community that we are aggressively looking at that. We think it's very important. There is a fee to that, and that's about $2,500 a year. It's expensive, but at this point, because we are so isolated, I think it's something that we're going to aggressively be looking at and potentially coming to you for to see if that's something that we can encumber on a regular basis. We're already planning future drills and tabletops with both CERT and admin to be able to address some of these type of issues, not only to this site, but then other emergencies that happen within the community. It kind of opens that door for us to do that. And then ultimately, we want input from the community specific to how they want to be notified. We're doing our due diligence to get this information out there, but like I said, we don't have a one-stop platform to get that information out to everybody, and maybe we haven't thought of something, and maybe somebody in the community does have that idea. So if there's something else out there that we haven't reviewed or haven't considered, I openly invite the community to let me know, and I'm happy to sit down with anybody and talk about that. But like I said, this was an excellent opportunity for us to review the incident after the fact. We've had a good review and update of all the policies that exist. We've talked about this extensively internally and noticed a lot of opportunities for improvement. So it was successful. We got through it. Nobody got hurt. And we're just looking to be able to implement better controls in the future.
Well, Chief, thank you so much for that, I would say, very detailed explanation of what took place as well as what has occurred since then, you know, to kind of shore up things. And you were talking about getting feedback from the community. I was going to ask for the board if they wanted to make any comments, but since I did get a request to speak on this item, I'll do that first if the board doesn't mind. Ms. Dickerson?
Oh, thank you, President Farmer, and thank you, Chief Hollingsworth. I happen to live on Park Hill. This incident occurred because we lost power for about 7 or 8 hours that day. It occurred right around 7 a.m. I left for Templeton at 10:30 a.m. for an appointment, so I left Park Hill at 10:30. As I was going out of town on Highway 1 in Cambria, two giant PG&E trucks were coming in and a smaller PG&E truck to address this item, as well as those that had arrived on the scene earlier, I had understood. But here's what I'm concerned about, and I don't believe that it was addressed in the chief's report. Those people, there are over 600 people that live on Park Hill. There is one road that gets us out to Highway 1, and that's Windsor Boulevard. Yes, there are multiple roads off of Windsor Boulevard between Windsor and then the ranch, the west side of the ranch, but that's it. So can you imagine how impacted people who had to get to work were at 7 a.m., people who had doctor appointments? We live in a community of 60% or more retired folks or not retired that have appointments. So I think that it would, if you want to know how to notify the community, I think there should have been, since PG&E was dealing with the electrical issue, the power outage, and et cetera, that some, either law enforcement or the fire department, should have had access to that road and monitored it for those who absolutely had to get out and were really hampered by this issue for a long period of time. So because of it happening so early in the morning, that would have impacted more people, maybe going to work, but if they had an appointment, like we did this morning for physicals this morning in Morro Bay. We had to leave here at 7 o'clock this morning. So I think that the policies or a policy needs to be made in addressing how does it impact a community within a community that only has one road out. And that's an emergency access road. We all know when that was put in place, I think it was a great idea. But for a member of the community to ask for a key to the gate, I don't think that was appropriate. I think it should have been handled differently. And I hope in the future that we never see something like this again, that there is a policy in place or action taken to address the situation at hand. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief, did you wish to respond to any Ms. Dickinson's comments? No, okay. So let's take this back to the board. Do you have any questions or comments for the chief? Yes, Vice President Steidel.
Chief, the Nexol acronym that you used, how does that actually spell out?
It's Nixle, N-I-X-L-E. It's a downloadable app for Android and iOS. And you just you log in, you create a profile and log in to the area. It'll indicate, you put in, I believe it's a zip code, and it'll give you the information on how to get there. And if for some reason you're having any difficulty with that, please don't hesitate to call me at the station.
Okay. In the report that you gave, which was far-reaching in the explanations and gave a lot of detail, that was very much appreciated. There was one thing I wanted to ask. It was my understanding, at least, that Carlos wasn't notified initially in this process, and so I just wanted to reiterate the idea that probably his participation could certainly help in monitoring the road access and so forth, and the possible suggestion that if it's necessary to open that emergency road again, that whomever opens the road stays there. In fact, that there are two people involved, so you have monitoring on either side to be able to direct traffic, because in a real event, it's possible that people would be trying to get out of the area, but by the same token, there may be emergency vehicles coming across for some reason, and so that would need to be able to be managed on a very proactive basis. So that was just a suggestion you may already have under consideration. And the last thing was certainly bring the potential use or need for that $2,500 for the system up for active consideration for the 2021 budget planning. And it certainly should be looked at.
If you would like, I did not get into the weeds on all the specifics of the policy. That's internal operational stuff, but you're absolutely right. Those notifications should have happened. Not all of them did. If we end up ordering the ranch opened, Carlos should be notified, and that road would not be opened without people stationed, at least two on each end. There's even been discussion, depending on weather and time of day and other events, whether or not a pilot car would need to be used. And those are all case incident dependent, depending on what's going on. Most likely it would be unidirectional. We're not going to allow people to go across both ways. And again, as an emergency access road, the primary use of this road is evacuation, not repopulation. There's a possibility it could be used for that, but that's not the intent of why it was designed. So all the issues that you brought up are absolutely identified in the policy and have been reworked and made sure that they are in place. Yes.
Director Rice.
One of the things that I want to just suggest as you bring forward a way of notifying, whether it's through Nixle or one of the other suggested possibilities, is that there's somebody, maybe it has to be somebody not in the fire department to send out those messages, because I think there's been incidents since we've had Nixle where, because the fire department is going to the scene, they don't have the time to take to send out a message that there is a problem, a fire or whatever it happens to be. So having it clear whose job that is, whether it's somebody who does the notifying, you may already have that, but I just as a suggestion, because I'm definitely for having more information out there from official sources that can be helpful.
As am I, and you bring up an excellent point. Usually in the middle of an incident, at least in the beginning stages of it, it can be very chaotic, and that time is not always available to free somebody up to do that. In the event of initial alert, it would take literally a couple of minutes to script whatever it is that needs to be said and then send that out. Typically, it will fall to the officer on duty or myself if I'm coming in as the executive command officer. Ultimately, if we have time and if this occurs during the day and there's somebody, we could definitely work into a policy, something where we are able to contact somebody within the administrative office and request by phone that something is put out. That seems like an ideal task for possibly somebody in the office. But you've raised a really good point that some of the existing social media platforms that we do have all take time, and none of those are available to people in the field. So things like Nextdoor or Facebook or the web page can all be updated, but they're all going to be time into the incident and not immediate. So getting somebody that can do that in a platform we could do it quickly on is imperative.
Thank you. Any more questions or concerns from the board? I just want to say, Chief, that we're very thankful that this particular event happened, let's say, on a relatively quiet, sunny day. Yes, it was in the morning, so it was a slight inconvenience to some folks. But imagine if it had happened during a real, actual emergency, which is always a potential in some fashion or another. So, as you say, you learned a lot from this particular event. Things will flow smoothly in the event that something more problematic occurs.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, anything else to say?
No, sir.
All right. Thank you, Chief. All right. Moving on to item number 5 and public comment. And it's hard to believe, but there are no public comment slips, so I'd like to make one. I was driving over here to the meeting today, and, let's say 100 or 200 yards from where I live, a neighbor of mine was out hosing down the gravel off of a portion of his driveway, you know, washing it out into the street. So I slowed down, I slowed down, rolled down the window of my Volkswagen, and I said, you know, you need to use your water more efficiently than this. And I said, you could use the broom. And I said, if you do this again, I'm going to have the water department come out and give you a citation. Well, obviously, that's probably not going to happen. But I think we're all aware of the fact that since January the 1st, this community has only had barely an inch of rain that occurred one day in the middle of January. And here we are in the middle of February. So it's mandatory for all of us out there, and as we already know, we are a very efficient community in our water use. But please, we have no idea what's on the horizon here for the remainder of the so-called winter rainy season. So please use foresight, use good judgment in how you use water in our community. I know folks already do that, but I think it's already time to be alert to the possibility of drought actually existing at this moment in time. So thank you. All right, I have a request here from Leslie Richard. I wish to speak during public comment, so Leslie.
Leslie Richards, Cambria resident. I just wanted to bring to your attention a number of new laws have been passed this year in the state of California. The one in particular that I wanted to bring to your attention was the Housing Crisis Act of 2019. It's Senate Bill 330. And in this document, in this law, it prohibits capping the number of housing units that can be approved or constructed either annually or for some other period of time in counties and cities. And what has happened is, I have here the document that is the SEIR, the actual draft, not the final. But in this document, it refers back to our cap, our 4650 cap, many, many times, how to mitigate the WMP's potential growth-inducing impacts, the WMP PEIR incorporated a build-out reduction program, BRP, as the tool to cap the maximum number of existing and potential residential connections within the CCSD service area to 4650. That this law has codified that that is now prohibited to cap. So technically, this document now needs to be amended. It needs to be changed, in my opinion. CEQA is very, very serious when it comes to new information or new changes in the law that would affect a document. I don't think that it has to be redone, but I do think it needs to be amended because this number now, there is no way of actually capping the number of residential houses if we have the water resource available to us. And I just, again, wanted to bring this to your attention. I assume that the district is aware of this Senate bill. I know that the Coast Commission has been reviewing this document for the last year, and it does affect us directly. So heads up and incoming. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Is this for public comment, Ms. Dickinson? Well, step right up. As soon as I adjust the clock here. Ms. Dickinson?
You might as well
just sit right there in the front row.
Whatever.
Although the exercise never hurts, right?
Well, that's okay. Thank you, President Farmer. A couple of things on this. What you were just referring to about the water situation. We do not know what will be coming up in the future months. However, you referred to us being very careful. We already are, a very careful community with our water use. But the emergency water supply project was built for that very purpose, that if we do have a drought, that's where our go-to backup. So here we are, 6 years and counting, since $500,000 was given to CDM Smith to design and engineer and build this project. So should we find ourselves in a difficult situation this year or next year? I think, when is this CDP, for heaven's sakes, going to be finished? And why do we try to muck it up with the UWMP? Let's get the CDP finished so that this project can be put into operation when it is needed, as it was voted on by the people. Not for some other project, for that project, for emergency water supply for existing residents. So I think, and what Leslie just referred to also is something you may want to take into account and do a little research on if you haven't already. But I think the whole town is just tired of, you mentioned CCSD and they just shake their head. Or heads, because they're just tired of the game that seems to be being played. So we're not a bunch of fools. Some of us really pay attention, but this town has been through a lot, and we're continuing to go through a lot. So I'm asking the board to, to just get on with the work at hand that you've been dealing with for 6 years. Let's get it done so that in the event of a real drought like we had in 12, 13, 14, and on, that we have a reliable supply of water for this town. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Seeing no further requests to speak in public comment, we're now moving on to regular business. And item A, 6A, I'd like to hand this off to. Well, first, let me hand this to our general manager to introduce the item, and then, Chief, it'll be all yours.
Thank you, Mr. President. Agenda item 6A is discussion and consideration of an assistance by hire agreement between CAL FIRE, San Luis Obispo Unit, and Cambria Community Services District. Staff is recommending that the board discuss and consider approval of an assistance by hire agreement between CAL FIRE and Cambria Community Services District specific to the use and staffing of the water tender resource. And Chief Hollingsworth will discuss this further.
Good afternoon again. Thank you for letting me review this with you. This is something that you've had a chance to review already internally. I'm not going to read through it. You've got the document in front of you. I just wanted to clarify the intent of how this is utilized. Cambria Fire is an active member, as is every other fire department in this county, and most of them in the state, of the Master Mutual Aid Agreement, which benefits us in that when we have incidents that come here and occur within the town, we have people that come in and assist us with those incidents as necessary. And they do that essentially cost-free. That doesn't cost us anything because we're in SRA, which stands for State Responsibility Area, as an unincorporated city. So that typically is because any kind of a fire, whether it's structure or wildfire or anything like that, threatens the infrastructure of the state if it were to get into the trees and the forest itself, which is why they aggressively want to come in here and help us as we try to protect the buildings and the infrastructure of the people that live here. That being the case, we also provide mutual aid outside of our area to other neighboring cities as needed. So if a structure fire were to happen in San Simeon right now, we would be the second engine going up there to assist in that goal. Any kind of a wildfire that happens directly outside of our borders, we automatically respond to. I've been on calls working in Cambria all the way out in Antelope Valley, which is way east of Shandon, and working here, ending up on calls in Pismo. It's not unheard of. It happens. It's what the mutual aid system is for. We typically right now, with the use of the water tender, respond that as part of the system. We're only one of four water tenders in the entire county. We're the only local government water tender that's available to be cross-staffed by people that are on duty, which means if they ask for it, we will take people off duty, put them on the water tender and send them, and do a call back with staff to come back and fill in, or we'll bring other engines in here or other personnel into staff to make sure we have continuous coverage within the community at all times. That is an unpaid response for at least the first 12 hours, which means we are donating that to them, but they're also, we get that direct benefit back every time they come back into the community, and every department is part of this. A unique approach to that was suggested by the unit chief, Chief Jalbert with Cal Fire, was that he wants to set up, if possible, if we agree to it, an assistance by hire agreement for the water tender. And what that basically means is we would be able to proactively staff that and pay for it on their dime, not necessarily second to an immediate need. So they would be evaluating this on a case-by-case basis as we get into the later days of summer when the weather is more problematic, when we have less rain, we expect high winds, temperatures are increasing. They may want to ask if we could proactively staff the water tender, have it available for even a quicker response, and they would start paying us after the second hour. It would be fully reimbursed, and they would be paying the cost of us to backfill our station. So this is staffed and utilized with our equipment, but paid for on their dime. That's the point of this. We're already doing this with mutual aid, but we're actually proposing a system wherein we could theoretically bring in more income and formalize that. The ultimate authority for the use of this does not leave our fire department. It does not leave my jurisdiction, which means it is an ask basis. So he can contact me and say, based on the following criteria, I would like to do this next Thursday and Friday if possible, and then we'll go from there. That will be reviewed internally, and if we have concerns internally based on staffing, local weather, temperatures, any kind of a problem here, I have the full authority to say it can't happen right now for the following reason, and he has to abide by that. He's very understanding of that, but this is also an excellent opportunity to provide a higher level of service for not only our area, but for our county as a whole, and to get reimbursed for it right up front.
Are you finished, Chief?
I didn't say I am finished. I apologize.
I thought there was a pregnant pause there to make an impression or something. I wasn't quite sure.
I apologize.
That's no problem. Any comments from the board? Any members of the board wish to say anything? Yes, Director Pearson.
I think it's a wonderful idea. Do we need a resolution for this, or what do we need to move forward? Just a consensus of the board vote?
I think you just need to approve it. How's it set up?
Mm-hmm. All we really have is a staff report and then the attachments.
It's just a motion to approve.
I'll make the motion to approve the agreement.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second.
I'm shocked. I have a question.
Sure. Director Howell, you have a question?
Yes, this is kind of a remedial. Is this on? Can you all hear me? It doesn't sound like it's on.
I can hear you, but I don't know about anybody.
It's on.
Is it on? It's on. Okay. Not all fire engines are water tenders. Some are not.
That is correct. Our two primary fire engines are what we would call type 1. They carry a limited amount of water, and all the tools and everything necessary to fight our typical structure fire. Our water tender has a limited amount of tools and carries almost 2,000 gallons of water, and it's for use in rural areas where they do not have a water fire hydrant system or access to other kind of tanks or things like that.
Thank you.
So, Chief, I was just going to ask that you just kind of answer that question, but you know, I'm looking here. It doesn't necessarily have a page number, but where you're describing, it says your item description, and A is water tender.
Yes.
And I was going to ask you, well, how many gallons of water does it have? And you just said 2,000 gallons, but it says here 500 gallons per minute.
That is, if you look at item B,
I saw that with the portable one, right?
Yeah. So it's 2,500 gallons. It's that dash is actually meant to be a comma. It's how they write things. Okay. So it's under 2,500 gallons, not 2,500 gallons, if that makes sense.
Oh, I see. Okay, 25. Yes. All right. Well, still, but just let me ask you, if you're pumping, how many gallons per minute?
That would vary depending on the incident. It's important to realize that most of the brush or wildland fire engines that you see, like the Cal Fire unit up here, they hold a max of about 300 gallons of water. So depending on the incident and where we can find a sustainable water source, we would either go and fill the other engines directly, and we could fill them, simple math, 7 times without going and filling up right now, or if it was an extended duration, we could drop our portable tank, dump all the water in the portable tank with a little mini tank, a little pump that can then fill them, and while they're using that, we would go with the water tender, fill it up again, and bring it back. It's called a water shuttling system.
All right. Well, thanks for that explanation.
Yes, sir.
So, seeing... Oh, yes, Director Rice.
I noticed on the ABH agreement for equipment, the same page that President Farmer was just on, it says beginning July 1st of 2019. Is this always a fiscal year term, or... Because it's obviously we're a little ways past July 2019.
It should be a fiscal year thing that is renewed every year at our discretion. This was initially brought to me at that time, and then there was some review between us, our legal counsel, and then with their group again, and then finally coming back to you. So now that we have all of those things ironed out, we're probably going to need to address this come July for the following fiscal year. But it would be an identical document.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that explanation.
Thank you. So, seeing no further... Did you wish to say something, Director Pearson? No problem. So, seeing no... seeing no further requests to make a comment from the board, we've already had a motion and a second. So, Ms. Dodson, could we take a roll call, please?
Sure. Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
On behalf of the fire department, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Moving on to item 6B, and let me let our General Manager, Mr. Weigold, introduce this item.
Mr. President, agenda item 6B is discussion and consideration to fill a vacant seat on the policy board. The staff is recommending that the board of directors discuss and consider appointing a replacement to fill a vacant seat on the policy board resulting from the resignation of John Rohrbaugh. We've attached as part of the report two applicants. One is Leslie Richards and the other is Jerry McKinnon.
All right, thank you. Since this is a vacancy on the policy committee, Director Howell, who is the chair of the policy committee, why don't I just hand this off to you?
All right.
See how, well, I mean, I think that's what we were going to do, yes. Oh, yeah, excuse me. Well, there you go. Thank you. That's why I have my sidekick here, sidekicks. We actually have three requests to speak on this item. And, you know, I knew that 5 minutes ago, but that was 5 minutes ago. So our first request to speak on this item is Karen Dean.
Good afternoon, Karen Dean, Cambria. We're back again on this same issue, trying to fill this vacancy. You know, I think that the policy committee chairman did a pretty good job explaining that he has discussed the applicants with the remainder of his committee members, and they were comfortable with both of them. He felt the same way, but expressed the opinion that he felt like Leslie Richards had a little bit more legal experience that would have been of benefit to the committee. However, he still did not put in a nomination. And I do think it was probably better that the policy committee chair do the nominating, since he is the one that's going to have to work it with them, or her. Anyway, these applicants have been in place ever since the first vacancy of Mike Lyons. You guys have seen these applications through that process and through this process. You're down to two people. May I suggest that you have these two applicants come up and speak to their qualifications and their desire to fill this vacancy so that you can finally make a nomination and get this done with? That's it. Oh, and happy Valentine's Day tomorrow. I brought chocolates to share with all of you. They're in the back of the room. Thank you.
Is your, just by the way, since you often have cookies and sweets and that type of thing, is your husband a dentist? I'm just curious. No? Okay.
All right, no, then. But he's a wonderful husband that brought me a really fantastic professional mixer so that I could do all those cookies.
All right. Our next request to speak on this item is Christine Heinrichs.
Thank you. It's time to fill this committee vacancy. The board has two applicants. The committee chairman, Don Howell, has expressed his preference and that of the committee members for Leslie Richards. Appoint her and allow the committee to get on with its work. Thank Mr. McKinnon for his willingness to serve and invite him to reapply for this committee or apply to serve on another. This is not complicated. Later in the agenda is an item related to the number of agenda items and the length of meetings. This is the second appearance of this item. A committee vacancy is not unimportant, but it is a conventional matter of business that deserves to be handled efficiently. It should not be deferred yet again. The board should accept the committee's request, fill the vacancy, and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next request to speak on this item is Tina Dickerson.
Well, let me just take my seat right here.
That's what I said earlier.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you, President Farmer. My comments will be brief. I think that Jerry McKinnon has served in many capacities through his many, many years here in our town, and I thank him, including his acting roles and even singing. Whatever hat he's wearing, you know what, he has a hat for everything. But I do believe that Leslie would bring something very special to the policy committee, and that is her background in legal work, but her proficiency in research and the willingness to really dig into documents and take the time. I think she kind of has a passion for that, as actually do I, but I think that Leslie would provide I just think a really, really good dose of what the policy committee could use and aid the committee in moving forward with, you know, important decisions for our town. So I would ask that you give strong consideration to Leslie Richards for this position. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, let's bring this item back to the board. And Director Howell.
Here I am again. May I ask the board if they would like to hear from the two applicants before I make my suggestion? Or are you happy? Have we heard enough? I think we've heard enough. Okay. In that regard, then, I would like to nominate Leslie Richard to fill this position.
Okay. I'm not going to second right now, but you were going to... You previously had said you wanted people to vote for people, not against people, and you were going to try to do it that way.
Would you like to go? We can go with that.
Yeah, I'd prefer.
Okay. Let me do it a little differently then.
Yeah,
let me make a motion that we hold an election with our two candidates, mm-hmm. and that the vote be by roll call, and that the majority candidate can prevail. It can be the appointee. So I'd like to move that so that we have a procedure in place.
I second that motion.
All right, so we have the motion being made and a second. So, Ms. Dodson, roll call, please.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
No.
President Farmer?
Aye. I had a 4-1 vote on this item, and we're moving forward.
Call for nominations.
Confusion reigns behind this microphone. All right, so let's call for nominations now.
All right.
And Director Howell, did you wish to make one?
Yes, I nominate Leslie Richard.
Do we have
a second? Yeah. According to Robert's rules, you don't need a second for this. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yes, Vice President Steidel.
I apologize. I thought that we were actually going through the vote call. I would be more than happy to change my vote and have it be yes for the process. And I apologize.
Yeah. Okay. So both the president and the vice president were confused.
Okay.
So just a little levity here.
Okay, so it's one nomination.
So we have a nomination for Ms. Leslie Richards.
And I'll nominate Mr. McKinnon.
Okay, so it seems to me that we should have a vote on each one of them. Is that what?
Or votes and say who you want.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Don, for that clarification. So why don't we start to our right here, and Director Rice, who would?
There's no need for a second because the procedure is that the candidates are nominated and then each director votes for which candidate.
Right. So Director Rice would...
So then I just say the candidate's name that I support.
Right.
Okay. Can I explain why?
Certainly, of course.
I don't know if that would be helpful or not. It's just briefly. I would vote for Leslie Richards primarily, but not solely, because she has more contact information, and an email address is a really important thing to have as a committee member. A lot of things get sent so you can be prepared for the meeting by email. And although I lean toward Mr. McKinnon's divergent thinking and his sense of humor bringing a lot of good things to a committee, I do think it's important also to be connected that way. So that's why Ms. Richards.
Vice President Steidel?
Mr. McKinnon?
Okay. Did you wish to make any comments?
Well, the last time that we were looking for a placement on the policy committee, I had indicated at that time that certainly the information that the committee chair brought forward I thought was appropriate and a choice on his part, and I was willing to support that, but had I been considering any other candidate, it would have been Mr. McKinnon. And so with that opportunity provided again, the candidate that I do support is Mr. McKinnon.
All right, thank you. Director Pearson?
Mr. McKinnon, and basically to provide more diversity to the of thought and conscience to the panel.
Director Howell.
Well, first, let me say that I I'm very happy with both candidates, and I would be happy with whoever takes the position. However, I will vote for Leslie Richards.
Well, that's obviously up to me to make my comments. And first, I want to say that having known Jerry since I moved here, and I recall the first time Jerry was doing a project. It was over on Cornwall and Sheffield, having to move some concrete around. Jerry, you probably don't remember that. It's probably going back about 30 years or so. And I was driving over to the radio station in my Volkswagen van, and there was Jerry out there working, and he had a couple of five-gallon buckets, and I just jumped out, and we worked on that for about an hour, hour and a half, and that's what this community is all about. And Jerry's been, you know, very active in a lot of different areas, and I really admire Jerry for everything that he's contributed to this community over the years, including having a restaurant and being known as Gringo, and that was a long time ago. I do want to comment on the fact that with regard to Jerry's application, where it says, and this is something that Director Rice alluded to, that Jerry does not have a cell phone or an email address available. That doesn't necessarily prevent him from serving and serving well on this particular committee. But I feel that Ms. Richard would be a more valuable asset to the committee for her wide range of knowledge, how much she has come. She comes to not just the R&I committee, she comes to policy, she comes to finance, always has a comment to make, she comes to the board meetings, and often provides information that we don't even know. But I want to just read quickly from Ms. Richard's comment here, just kind of edited here as to why she wants to be on the board, on the policy committee. Have been a local activist involved in all, in all operations of the district since 2000. I'm excited at this new opportunity to volunteer my time in a vital and productive manner. And the way that she verbalized her, let's say, and Leslie is a person, as we know, with passion and with knowledge. And I think just on all of those things that I just said, that I cast my vote for Leslie Richard. So I believe that we have a 3-2 vote for Ms. Richard to be the new member of the policy committee. And I think, are we finished with this item?
Yep.
Thank you. I hope everyone on the board, I realize that other people had other choices, but I think Ms. Richards will serve well. And I just want to say this much, Chair. You obviously are more than willing or more than welcome to attend a policy committee meeting. Mm-hmm. And when something comes up that you feel you have something informative and appropriate to contribute, please do so, okay? And there's no coffee, though. You'd have to bring your own. Sorry, buddy. All right, moving on to the next agenda item, and since we have moved item 6C to March, we have moved item 6G up to this position. So item 6G, I'll let our general manager, all right, he is ready. So General Manager Weigold, if you would introduce this item, please.
Yes, Mr. President, agenda 6G is discussion and consideration regarding agenda publication and the number of items for future board meetings. Staff is recommending that the board discuss and consider the publication and number of items for future agendas. And this this item was originally asked to be on the agenda by Director Rice, and I don't know if she wants to further discuss that. From the lead, we listed a number of items as options of ways to consider limiting the budget, such as a maximum number of items per agenda, limiting the number of items to a lesser, more manageable amount in its entirety, and also allowing for items of considerable interest to the community or holding special meetings in those cases. With that, I'll turn it over to the board for further discussion.
Anyone wish to, Director Rice, you wish to comment?
Are there any public comment slips?
On this particular item, no.
Okay. So in reviewing the board bylaws and looking at our agendas, one of the reasons I'm glad that we're having this discussion is I think it's incumbent upon the president and vice president to be cognizant about how much time each item may take. In the past, we had 15 minutes on every item, which is no offense to staff who was trying to accommodate a time schedule, a little on the ridiculous side to say 15 minutes for an item like we just went over or an item that is much more simple. But I think until there's a board procedures manual or something to guide the board as a whole about how to do these things, it is incumbent upon the president and the vice president to be working with the GM and keeping in mind that there is a time limit, and we want to try and stay inside of it rather than having to always go to a vote to extend. Because the point was not to insert additional votes in a meeting, but to actually limit the time. There's, of course, and you know, that's to the president and vice president's discretion, so that they can incorporate things that might be more urgent because of a budget issue or because they need to get something signed and done before a certain date, and also how much community interest and how much time would be taken. It's not an easy thing to do because you don't know how long you're going to have, how many people will be coming to comment, how long I will drone on. It's hard to know. So I just would like to, on this specific item, I don't think we need to necessarily take an action, but I would like to make sure that the rest of the board understands that that's my position on this, and that there's a consensus that that's an appropriate approach for limiting the agenda, rather than saying only three items or some other calculation. But since I'm not president or vice president, it's not up to me what goes on to the agenda, other than I just want our president and vice president to be cognizant of those time limits, and they're there for a reason.
Yes, Director Pearson.
I would agree with a lot of what Director Rice said, and one of the things that I failed to do as president and that I wish I had done a better job of was assigning things to the consent agenda, because I think that's one way to get a lot of stuff done more quickly. For instance, the items on our agenda today, item E could have been written where, the staff recommends that this be assigned to the R&I committee. Same thing with item D. Staff could write that they feel that this is a good use of the policy committee to go ahead and research and use the information that they provided us to bring back a policy to us on emails. That's why we have those standing committees, is to try to do some of this busy work for us and then bring to us a finished product that again could go on the consent agenda as here's something very quickly we can zip right through and get more things on the consent agenda and establish, I think, a better rule for the staff to go ahead and write staff recommendations that send things to these committees when they feel that's appropriate.
Thank you, Director Pearson, for that suggestion. Yes, Director Howell.
Director Pearson basically took the words out of my mouth, so I heartily agree. I think all we really need now is consensus to the and a plea to the president and vice president, you know, to... But I think what I would like to see, and I think in the proposed bylaws there may be some verbiage coming forth on that. I agree, however, that to create a too rigid thing, whatever comes forth needs to have flexibility, but with the understanding. I think we all agree that as much as we enjoy this, there's a limit to how much fun we can have in any one day. So, yes.
I'm against limits.
Spoken like a true Aquarian. Let me just say this much. Having been fortunate enough to be vice president under Director Howell, under Director Pearson, that it seemed to me that there were more than a number of times when he would be aware of, well, we've got too much on the agenda, and we've got to kind of narrow it down. So I know that he did that, and I'd like to think that Director Steidel and myself, working with staff, would take the same approach. I'd like to briefly comment on one of the items on this, by the way. Right down here at the bottom of the page, the last sentence where it says, there was also some discussion regarding the use of time estimates on the agenda. I believe Director Rice already addressed this. I took the time to take a look at various agencies, county and city and CSD agencies just in this county, to see how they do their agendas. And needless to say, none of them have some kind of time element out there next to the item to see how little time would be taken by that item. So there we are. So I don't know if we've discussed this. There's no real need to. Oh, yes, Vice President Steidel.
I want to iterate the items that Director Rice and Pearson have said. And also, I think that individually, we all probably need to do a better job of making sure that when we're going through our discussion pieces that we stick to the agenda item and not find ourselves going out in tangents about information, because I think that consumes a lot of time in expressing personal positions.
Well, I don't know about personal positions, but if I could just make this comment, in taking the time to watch the meetings after they've taken place, there hasn't been at least one time where every member of this current board, I'm sitting here saying, well, why are they continuing to go on like this, including myself, obviously. So I think just being a little bit more conscious. I know sometimes, as I often describe myself, open mouth, let foot out for air. So I think we'd always probably be a little bit more aware when we're beginning to discuss an item. So having addressed that, I don't think we need to say any more on this particular item. We've all spoken eloquently, and I'll try to make this shorter. Moving on to the next agenda item, which is 6D, establishment of, let me hand it off to our general manager for item 6D.
Yes, Mr. President, agenda number 6D is the discussion and consideration to establish a policy regarding retention of emails. Staff is recommending that the board discuss and consider establishing a written email retention policy. The district council will discuss this further based on some of their research.
Quit that. President Farmer, members of the board, recently concerns were raised by the public and by the board regarding email retention. The district has no email retention policy. Email that is not identified by the sender or receiver as a public record and stored is deleted after 30 days. Email is a public record if it relates to the public's business and is prepared, used, or retained by the district. Email that is retained as a public record is retained per the district's records retention schedule, which severely needs to be updated. email retention policies vary widely. Some, like San Luis Obispo's, basically use the unwritten district policy. The employee determines if an email is a public record and retains it per the retention schedule. Emails that are not public records are promptly deleted. Some agencies retain all emails for 60 days, some 90 days, others for as long as 2 years. The city of Rio Grande has a two-year policy. It's recommended that the board discuss this issue and provide direction to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. We have one request to speak on this item, by the way. Well, we might have two by the time this is over, but we have at least one request to speak at this moment, and it's the newest member of our policy committee, Leslie Richard.
Leslie Richards. I would like to add text messages to emails as well. There are a number of judges in our court system who sees text messages as a contract. So depending on who you are actually dealing with in the courts, it's kind of out in the air, but texts and emails are kind of in two separate different categories. So you have tweets, texts, and emails, and I think texts and emails should be two separate items in this policy and should be incorporated as well on a two-year retention program if it has anything to do with the district. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for making that short because I forgot to turn the clock on. Tina Dickinson would also wish to speak on this item, so I will turn the clock on.
There it is.
Go, Tina.
3 minutes. Thank you, President Farmer. On this item, all I would hope is that whatever is decided upon, that we make sure that we are being as transparent as we possibly can be. I know that I've certainly put in public records requests, and more recently I put in a request for electronic devices, the information that was that were being used with electronic devices from a meeting and with two people in the meeting on staff. And I was disturbed as I brought up at the podium that particular meeting that members of staff were using their iPhones and iPads pretty much throughout the meeting, which told me that they weren't really paying attention to the board's business. So I did receive a response to, or responses to both those public records requests. I think for me it is just that we have to follow some laws, whatever those laws are that pertain to the retention of certain public records that or information that the public absolutely has the right to have access to. So my hope is that the board will do their homework and maybe a closed session or something to talk with legal counsel about this, but it's pretty serious stuff, so not something that you want to have a misstep, but that's why we pay legal counsel to help you with this sort of thing. I don't think we like making tons and tons of requests for public records, but sometimes we find that we don't get what we want when we should be getting it, and so all public government agencies have to provide the public information they're requesting, but not, as legal counsel's already mentioned in the report, I mean, it could be retained for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, up to 2 years. I've gotten some from this district that you wouldn't believe how far they went back, and you wouldn't believe what was in them either. So thank you so much.
Well, Tina, could you reveal anything about what you read that you thought might excite this meeting or anything like that?
I could write a book and it'd be a bestseller.
Oh, cool. All right. So seeing no more requests to speak, let's bring this back to the board for discussion. Director Rice.
The thing that concerned me most was the potential for the inconsistency of saving emails. And having each staff member determine without having any kind of clear guidance about what you should be saving and what you should not be saving, because what I save might not necessarily be a public record if I'm making a decision on my own and I'm on staff. So I think it's important that the board undertakes a good discussion, perhaps best undertaken by the policy committee to look at what some of these details are about how do we give guidance to staff to ensure that the emails that are important are kept and the ones that are, thank you for your input, thank you for your feedback, you got time to meet tomorrow, that stuff is less important. And maybe one of the things that needs to be considered is email threads and subject lines on emails, because when I was president, there were multiple times where I would get an email that had the same subject line, but it had evolved over a number of emails to the point where it was no longer about what, and I wasn't even on the original email that's at the bottom of that thread. So I think threads is something we need to be looking at, whether we save that entire thread or just the... But I appreciate all of the information that's in here, and my suggestion is we refer this to the policy committee for their consideration, and then they can bring back something for us to look at that's not seven different, which I totally appreciate. I don't want to be... And it'll be helpful, hopefully, for the policy committee, too.
Vice President Steidel.
I feel that with the information in the staff report that was brought to us, a lot of it that I believe was provided on behalf of our legal counsel, that there is plenty of information here that defines what the legal requirements are, the segregation of identification of statute versus other manners of record. The thing that I think that this all boils down to is being able to clarify for the staff and establish an email management policy. And by doing that and by putting some parameters around defining what would be considered a record and something that should be kept for reference. I think the other thing is that people need to understand that Outlook, which is the email application, is just that. It's an application. It was established to receive emails and send emails, and it does allow users to save emails for more than 30 days within the Outlook environment by flagging them. But that's more of a planning tool, which Outlook can also be for planning your business, to going back and asking yourself questions about things, or for using it to prompt. So that doesn't have anything to do with saving documents for another reason. The other piece of managing the email management policy, I think, will be to define once an email content has met the parameters of being saved as a record, whether it's something about saving the email or saving a hard copy, and the hard copy being filed specifically with the subject matter that it's addressing, or be linked to it in some way like that. The other thing would be in the saving of an email, it's something that's saved outside the Microsoft environment, so it's saved within the drivers of the district data. And those would be my comments, and I do think that it does need to go to the policy committee for definition and maybe outlining some of those things we should consider for the email management policy.
All right, thank you. I don't see, oh yes, Director Howell, excuse me, Director Pearson, pardon me.
I would like to see this go to the policy committee, absolutely. And as Mr. Carmel said, the retention policy that we currently have is way out of date and needs to be updated also. And I think those two need to be done in concert with one another and should be sent back to us at the same time for our consideration. So,
Director Howell.
Thank you. I said the policy committee would be glad to accept the assignment. Let me just make a few comments, though, just in general. Thanks to the staff for what's been presented to us. One thing that I've noted is that almost much of what I've read, and not only what the staff presented, but Director Rice forwarded some material to me as well, most of that, now this is 2020 now, And some of this policies that we have been reading in the samples, I think the latest is 2013. So we're looking at a six-year period. Now, what's happened over a six-year period of time is that the cost of storage has gone down amazingly. Many of the aspects of the policies that we've read had to do with balancing the retention requirement on the one hand versus the expense of maintaining and accessing the material. So I think it's very well that even if we were to say, gee, this policy looks really good, I think it would need to be examined in the light of current technology. So for that reason alone, I think it's something that should be addressed. Just by way of example in that regard, I have a Google email account. I delete many things, but most everything that I receive, I actually archive. And that can go back years, and I don't pay anything for it. So storage is really, really, really cheap. So I have some technical questions, which I have the policy committee work with staff on, which where we really need to contact our software providers. Issues as to where exactly is our information stored, for example, and the cost of storing that information, and what is available to access it. And Director Steidel brought an interesting point up, which also is in our writing, which is in any email system, there's much which, should you decide to go with another vendor, then you're faced with this issue of how do you then migrate the old emails into the new system, or how do you access them? At any rate, it's a huge thing. And we have a lot of hungry people on the policy committee that would really like to get their hands dirty. So I think this is a great opportunity for them, and we'll be talking. I'd like a motion from the board, though, to actually pass both of these items to us so we know we're really doing the right thing.
So with regard to making a motion, would someone wish to make? Director Rice.
I move that we refer the email management and retention policies to the policy committee for their consideration and development.
I believe I have a second to my left.
I will second, but I do have one caution here. Is the, you know, once we start saving everything and we get a public request for information, we could make a nightmare out of this thing. So we've got to be very careful about, you know, how long we're keeping things and how long we're going to be able to access properly. If somebody asks for all the emails concerned with subject X, it's going to not be easy to get that. And tying up staff time trying to get those emails out is something that really needs to be considered by the policy committee when they do that. But otherwise, yeah, I'll second that. I think the general manager has something.
Do we? General Manager Weigold.
I was just going to suggest addition to your motion, and that is to broaden the scope of this charter to the policy committee to look at all records retention, not just the manner of email, which is a subset of that.
Right, but by the retention policy itself.
Correct.
Yeah. You mean, so that's, for all document retention.
Records retention.
Records retention. I appreciate the suggestion. I think that we do need to do that. I think that we need to do this first, since we do not have an accurate policy in place that reflects current law and current technology. And I would say that we can assign that off to the policy committee once we get this one done. I don't want to be overloading them, because the email specifically. The records retention policy was reviewed in 2013, I believe, and updated at that time. But there have been changes, and we definitely should be looking at it again. But I think it right now, unless there is some other urgent need I'm missing from the general manager's request, I think that we do this first and then the next. Mr. Carmel.
Yeah, I think splitting them apart is pretty important. Records retention is largely statutory. There's not a lot of discretion involved. It's really just getting in place the the codes, if you will, and breaking them down into and compartmentalizing them. And typically, they're actually done by consultants. They're very expensive. That's probably where we need to be in this time. I mean, we really do have a records problem, I think, in terms of destruction. We're overloaded, and we do need to put something in place that will allow us to relieve ourselves of a lot of these documents that we don't need anymore, legally anyway. So I do think breaking them apart is probably very smart.
So, Mr. Carmel, did you just say that we need to have a consultant to see what records we retain and which ones we throw away? Did you actually say that?
No, I didn't say that. I said typically these are prepared by consultants.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
We could steal them, but most of them are copyrighted, and they're very long. Roy Grandes is about 200 pages, and it's quite complicated. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's quite complicated. We should probably just look into it, see the cost, and perhaps we could do it in-house, but it's a pretty big project to take on a full records retention policy, if you will.
Well, sticking with the item that we have here right now with regard to email retention, we have a request to speak from the person, I believe, who first made this kind of an issue that has been hanging around for a while. So I have a request to speak from Mr. Paul Nugent.
Happy Thursday. I just wanted to share with you guys, so thank you guys very much for addressing this because it's an important issue to me. I think it's great to bring this to the policy committee and make sure that the policy committee goes over it, but I also see that there's an urgency to make a decision on the way that things are being handled today. Basically, to my assessment and with the email exchanges that I've had, you guys have a management decision that's being taken place, or basically you have management that's deciding on how emails are being retained right now. And that requires a management change or a management decision change. And so that's what I'm kind of getting at right now is we can make policies, but in the process of making those policies, you need to manage things differently. So that's it.
Thank you. So I'm kind of at a minor loss right now. Do we need, we've made a motion and a second. We've done this, correct?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. But I'm not sure what we're voting on either.
Right. I was going to ask.
We're voting to my motion was specifically to refer the email management and the email retention policy to the policy committee.
Okay. So we're not tackling document and record
not
retention.
Not the other records retention. That will be a follow-on later. Yeah. So that's not part of this current motion that I made.
Okay, thank you. Do we actually need to take a vote on this?
There's a motion.
Thank you.
Committee, yeah.
All right. So, Ms. Dodson, could you make a roll call here, please?
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Vice President Stido?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. And so, Ms. Richard, you got aboard just in time. All righty, moving on to item 6E. And before I hand this off to the general manager, Jerry McKinnon, Jerry, you handed in a slip to speak on general comments, which I believe would be public comment. And public comment, it will come at the end of the meeting after we've finished all the items that we have on the agenda. So if you want to stick around, I'll make sure to call on you at that time. I hope that's okay with you. So like I say, moving on to item 6E, and General Manager Weigold.
Yes, Mr. President, agenda item 6E is discussion and consideration regarding tasking the Resources and Infrastructure Committee with researching offsite water storage possibilities. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors task the Resources and Infrastructure Committee with researching off-site water storage possibilities. We have the Utilities Manager standing by for questions as well, but with our water supply planning, considering it as a portfolio perspective, there could be varied options for the community. for a long-term approach to addressing water supply resiliency. So with that, I'll refer it to the board for further discussion.
Someone just turned in a I believe that we're going to get a few more comments from Mr. D'Anzo, but we just had a request to speak. So let's do that first from, if you don't mind, pardon me, Ray, from Leslie Richard.
Leslie Richard, sorry. Some members of the community have expressed interest in exploring an off-site water storage site, quote, from the agenda packet. I appreciate that this is a current comment, but actually Army Corps of Engineers are the ones that actually recommended off-stream storage in a huge document that they produced for us a long time ago. In fact, they had multiple different sites. So this was done by Army Corps of Engineers as a combined project. So this is not a new situation here. It's not just a few members in town who think it's a great idea. This has been on the books for a long, long time. So I just want to remind everybody that Kathleen Anderson and I had long conversations about off-stream storage in 2014, 15, and 16. She was the head of Army Corps of Engineers at the time that was responsible for this project. And per our request, CCSD asked Army Corps Engineers to stand down while we did the EWS. So the historical record in this agenda packet is a little bit twisted in an interesting direction, but the actual truth of the matter was that we had a lot of the work has already been done, not necessarily on this site, the current site for the Warren Ranch, but other sites in that creek area. So there is a lot of data and a lot of information out there on off-stream storage. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next request to speak on this item is Tina Dickerson.
Thank you. I'm a little confused. I thought we would have had the presentation first by Mr. D'Anzo and then respond. But as many of you know, if you were here back in 2013 and 14, when we had this terrible drought and in 2013, and it got to the point where the district said we don't have enough water for October of 2013, we're going to be short 19 acre feet. Well, that was in September of 2013, early September, after the board had said in August, in the next meeting, September, we're going to hand out up to 20 intended serves, still in a moratorium, still water 350 code. And I thought, what? So I got to work, and I thought, what can I do? What can I do to do something about this water mess? So I called the state. Of course, there was Prop 1, $7.5 billion for all kinds of water projects, including reservoirs, dams, off-stream storage, and desal, all kinds of projects that could have been we could have gotten money for. And so that looked good. Then I contacted the planning department. I met with a planner. He said, if you could get your board to move on something like this, we could get it done in 2 years. Then I called staff at Coastal Commission. They said, this looks good. This would be great for Cambria. We'd have to, you know, we'll see how things go in the EIR. And then I contacted Mr. Clyde Warren. I'd never met this man. I'd heard about him offering property for a possible off-stream storage reservoir. So I met with him in 2013. We went on at the end of, I think, October. We went on a site visit along with his wife, Sue, and I was very impressed. I thought, gee, it's right across from our well field. This is amazing. It's a drywall canyon. It's not a blue line stream. Lots of good things. And then Mr. Warren then hired an engineer. He said the capacity could be 600 to 700 acre feet, depending on how much was dug out, it was 30 acres of his property, of several hundred, 30, this drywall canyon. So then he had Gus Yates do his evaporation and seepage studies, which looked really good, like 5%, so that looked really good. The location was amazing. I gave a presentation, Mr. Warren was there, we had the engineer, we had a geologist. The room was packed, people were sitting on the floor, and at the end of it, after all the Q&As, and we had boards, they're in the back of my car now, tons of graphs and drafts and information.
I took a straw poll vote. 97% of the people that were there supported this project. It made sense for firefighting. It made sense for off-stream, for pumping during the winter, that we could do pumping when we had the water to store this water. And the board, 10 days later, that was January 20th, 2014, on the 30th of January, 2014, the board handed over the check to CDM Smith for what we have now in our property on San Simeon Creek Road. I told Mr. Warren that, you know, this is something I think is still possible. I don't quite know what the district's looking at. The Army Corps looked at three different sites further up east of his property. That's what they included in their report. And so it wasn't, they didn't look at his property. I don't know why. So that's pretty much it. I did contact Coastal Commission. They said, the person I spoke to said that Mr. D'Enzo had been in touch, and that staff at Coastal said that he offered next helpful steps to do a preliminary survey to determine whether there are any sensitive habitat features, let me just finish my sentence,
thank you,
or protected coastal resources at the site, and to check with county staff about what would be likely a conversion of ag land. I let him know that the county would be the lead, but we'd be happy to participate. That's from Coastal. Okay? So, thank you.
All right, Tina, thank you. I know you always have much information to give, but and I allowed you to go a minute and a half over. So just be a little bit more conservative in your thoughts sometime, or in your speaking, if you don't mind. Our next request to speak is Mr. Clyde Warren.
Thank you, Board. I just wanted to let you know, since Tina covered everything, she could have my minute and a half. And I'm just going to say that it's still available, the property. So I'd be happy to work with anybody on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Clyde. I don't know if that was valuable for you, Ray, to hear those public comments before you gave your presentation, but I think you're up now. So my apologies if that was not in the correct order.
No, there wasn't going to be an official presentation. I wanted to clarify, you know, some of the things that I wrote in this staff report. I apologize if it seemed like I twisted anything. That wasn't my intention. And I came into this project kind of new. As a district engineer, I want to explore different water resiliency ideas. I've always I've been taught that approaching water supply issues from a portfolio standpoint is always valuable. This particular project, quite frankly, I try to maintain objectivity in all of these things, and so I want to be straightforward with that. This particular solution is a solution that would be helpful during times of normal to above normal rain. It's a solution. And I think it's worth exploring, but I didn't want to keep pursuing it from a staff point of view. I think it needs to be pursued in a public forum, and that's why I would recommend that the board direct the Resources and Infrastructure Committee to explore it some more. So, but I would definitely assist in any way possible. But again, I do want to maintain objectivity on this. I approach all of these water supply planning ideas with in a portfolio point of view and objectively.
Thank you, Ray. Any questions or comments to Mr. D'Enzo? Yes, Director Howell.
This is a general comment. It's more to the board. I see that this is an important thing to do for a number of reasons, one of which is that because we do have, our function is as a water board, one of the things that I think that we probably need to be very, that we need to do is to demonstrate due diligence in terms of attempting to provide water to this community. I think that may help us in terms of some legal problems that we are likely to encounter. We need to be able to say we are doing the very best we can to find water for this community. Regardless of whether the water's out there or not, it's a whole nother question, but we really have to be looking for it. And we have to be seen to be looking for it. That's all I wanted to say on that.
Right.
So, yes, please, infrastructure folks, go forth. Do it.
Vice President Steidel.
I would agree with what Director Howell just said. And to that point, if I'm not mistaken, the Army Corps of Engineers looked at, I don't know, something like, was it as many as 40 different options? 35 options. When there was consideration for the SWF, and it probably would be worth going back and just pulsing those to see if something else comes out from that too, because the Warren Reservoir was one of the items that was looked at in that configuration, and there may be other things there that would be.
Well, it seems like heads are shaking and correcting you, including Mrs. Warren. So, I mean, there we are.
Well, I'll put it this way: in the report information that I've read, there was reference to the fact that the Warren Reservoir was one of the 35 that was considered, and that there was an assessment that talked to the cost factors associated with it for it being a water reservoir. So I'll go back and I'll look at the wording again, but it was one of the 35. So I would suggest that maybe going back and taking a look at the listing just to see if there's something else that might bring itself out of that.
All right, thank you. I have another request to speak on this item, by the way. Jerry has changed it from just being a public comment to wanting to make a remark here on this particular item. So, Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon, thank you for the coffee. Sometimes the most complex problems are resolved with a simple solution. Many years ago, we had in this town a thing called honorary mayor. The honorary mayor ran on a platform. The platform of this gentleman who retired from the Cambria radar station had as his platform the Cambria Yacht Club. Now, you can laugh all you want, but it's a simple solution. This was his solution. Dredge out that property that's next to Highway 1 and the bank. That measures about 4.5 acres of land. If you dredge that down, if you dig it down 10 feet, how many acres of water will you have? Now, the supply of that water is very simple. You just cut the bank out of the Santa Rosa Creek, and during the wintertime, let all that water that's going down into the ocean and has no value to us fill the reservoir. Now, if it overflows, that can go underneath the new bridge, but we'll have about 45 acres of water if we dredge that out. Now, if you want to have a Cambria Yacht Club, what you do is you move the bank down into the Cambria old library building and let them use that for the bank, and then that building would be the yacht club. But that's an extension of it all. But at any rate, go down and look at that site. It's a nice size for a basin of water for Cambria. You can build a fence around it to keep people from throwing trash in it. You can do that kind of stuff at an insignificant cost than taking something all the way up the hill and digging one out of there. Put it on your list to investigate. I think you will be very pleased with the site and what it can do for Cambria. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. And since our general manager from Stamford, Connecticut, didn't you with the Hongti Yacht Club over there? You might want to investigate this possibility, right? I didn't hear either, Vice President Seidel. No, that's okay. All right. If I could just, I don't want to get off track here, but obviously we're handing this off to the R&I committee.
I have some
Director
comments
Rice.
To make before we do that.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. I didn't see your light.
I'm sorry.
It's not a problem.
I'm so far over here on the whatever side this
nothing to be sorry
on which way
about.
You're facing.
Are you is she on starboard or?
So the first thing I'd like to say is I do not support doing this. I do understand that off-stream storage could be a potential source of additional water for this town, but I am concerned about permitting to take additional withdrawals from the creek in order to fill it. I'm concerned with the costs. I also think that we have completely disregarded one thing that this board did back in 2007. They put together a water master plan, and the water master plan talks about a portfolio perspective, which is, I'm very glad to hear that that is Mr. D'Enzo's approach also, is a portfolio. The portfolio included having more purple pipe, which is using water for irrigation only. There was a purple pipe installed along Moonstone Beach. We don't have a way to supply water to that system yet. We kind of did a pseudo irrigation when we opened up in Santa Rosa Creek the extra well during the drought, that people could go down and fill up their containers with that water for irrigation. But since off-stream storage wasn't one of the options that was included in that water master plan to build our portfolio, but water for irrigation purposes specifically that could be used but wasn't drinking water standards is something that was in there and is not something that we've undertaken. We've also, one of our important parts of our portfolio is efficiency, not conservation, efficiency. Efficiency means how much water you use to get the job done is less than you would otherwise have to use if you didn't have the technology, say, low flow sink faucets, for one example. Not a great example, but one example. And we have not been implementing that efficiency plan that the board approved in 2013. So there are many parts of the water portfolio that the board has already looked at, and I think that it is more important, at least to me, that they are looking at the things that we already are doing. I also don't know how much they currently have on their plate and whether this would create a backlog of other things that are really much more critical, because if we don't know how much water we have to manage, I mean, I still don't have a good clear answer to that. How much water are we currently able to provide to the town? Whether it's drought or not, and the water master plan is something that really, it was a program EIR for purposes of providing information to the board about different options to have additional water sources or additional resiliency in our portfolio. I do not support sending this particular item right now because I think that we will find, I could be wrong and maybe that's why we should refer it, but I kind of think that off-stream storage has too many permitting and financial obstacles to actually move forward, whereas having specific purple pipe that people can tap into. We've already got some laid. The entire hotel row on Moonstone Drive could be using it if we can find a way to get water to that purple pipe for them to use. And that's not the same as the drinking water that we all use on a regular basis out of our taps. So that's my position on this. And I don't necessarily think that it's... a bad, bad idea, but I do think that we have higher priorities that the R&I committee needs to be looking at.
Well, I'm sure I did see Director Pearson, who is the chair of R&I, making some notes, and undoubtedly he was listening and probably go back and watch this, watch your presentation and go from there and take it to the R&I committee. And it sounds like you have a lot of information to gather with regard to this item. So it's really important. I just wanted to make this comment. And I know that Ms. Dickinson already alluded to the fact that this item has been brought up many times in the past. Mr. D'Anzo and I had the opportunity to speak for about an hour a week after he came on board here, pardon the pun. And one of the things that I was really impressed with was the fact that he expressed an interest in off-stream storage and stormwater capture as a way to look forward at this particular time, you know, here in Cambria. So that was much appreciated, and I'm glad we're going to look into this, because it's something, like I say, that's been on the radar screen for a long time. And I want to thank Director Rice for her comments. And it seems to me like, to make a motion? I just need some understanding. We need to make a motion to hand this off to the R&I committee. Is that correct? All right. So I'd like to have someone make it. Yes, Vice President Steidel.
In the respect that the chair of the R&I committee was making some notes, and there were some issues that Director Rice brought up, maybe we should ask him first if that is something that he feels that the committee could be taking on right now, or is there sufficient amount of manpower having to go towards some of the things in front of R&I already?
I think we can take this on. I think we can form a subcommittee and start by tapping a lot of the information that's already out there, looking at the 2007 plan, looking at the Army Corps of Engineers information, and also asking Ms. Dickinson to do a deposition of everything she knows. And, you know, we can come back at some point in time and have some kind of recommendation on this and probably look at some other opportunities and bring them back also.
Thank you. I just saw Ms. Dickinson making a comment that maybe we could have a workshop, and since this is obviously a really serious item with regard to the potential, this could be with regard to the future of our community and getting an additional water source, having community involvement probably would be a good idea at some point. So we have a motion to hand this on.
Has it been a motion?
Well, then, Director Howell, why don't you make that motion?
That was what I was thinking of. Yes, yes. I move that the CCSD Board of Directors task the Resources and Infrastructure Committee with researching off-site storage, water storage possibilities. And that would include both storage of potable water, non-potable water, and stream water and stormwater capture, recapture.
Do we have a second?
What were all of those again?
Well, we could leave that off. Just let's keep it simple.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm
going to repeat it.
Use the KISS method.
Sorry, yes. I'm going to repeat it. Keep it total simplicity here, directly out of our thing here. So I move that the Board of Directors task the R&I committee with researching off-site water storage possibilities.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right. So before we go on with taking a roll call vote, we have one more request to speak on this item, Ms. Karen Dean.
I think Director Howell kind of clarified all the categories of off-site storage I was thinking of. This discussion started out sounding like it was about off-stream storage, where the title of this agenda item was off-site storage. And so we're not just talking about reservoirs. I thought we were also talking about potable water storage tanks. you know, rainwater catchment, all of those things that Director Howell named off. So I just appreciate Director Howell's explaining all of those things. And yes, I think R&I committee would love to take this on. Vice Chair speaking. Thank you.
That was the Vice Chair of the R&I committee. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dean. And I seem to recall, just to make one more comment, when President Pearson stepped down, he handed off a list of things that the board needed to tend to in 2020, and I believe this was one of the items on that list. So here we are now. So, Ms. Dodson, if we could take a roll call vote, please. And if you could just read what Mr. Howell said one more time before we vote on this.
Director Howell moved that the Board of Directors task the R&I committee with off-site water storage possibilities.
All right. Roll call vote, please.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Steidel?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No, and I want to make a comment after the vote, thanks.
President Farmer?
Yes. Director Rice?
I appreciate that this was brought to the board to direct to the committee. That is the way that we should be tasking the committees. They should not be tasking themselves. So I thank the president, the vice president, and the GM for putting this item on the agenda. Just because I voted no on it doesn't mean I don't think it's the right process. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're moving on to... Oh, all right. We're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll be back at 4:30. We'll be back at 4:30. I just want to make this comment that it was 2 years ago today that a week after I had my hernia surgery, and Director Rice was nice enough to drive me down to see the surgeon for the post-op, you know, exam. And on the way back, having noted astrologically that it was an ideal day to adopt a canine companion, that we stopped at Animal Services, and I wound up adopting a fellow that is now known as Little Chiron. And so I want to thank Director Rice for allowing this memory to be in my life. And it's the two-year anniversary of Chiron and I being together, and it couldn't have happened without Director Rice, so thank you. Thank you, Amanda. All right, taking a break. Be back at 4:30 on either clock. No problem. Thank you. All right, moving on to the last item on the... Yes, Director.
We probably do need to make a notation in the minutes that...
Ms. Rice.
Director Rice.
Yeah, Director Rice. Well, she did point out that she would have to leave early, and she has, so we still have a quorum, but we're down to four directors now. Thank you, Director Pearson. So moving on to what is now the final agenda item, number 6F, and General Manager Weigold.
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item number 6F is discussion and review of the status of the Van Gordon Creek property and consider options related to the same. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors review the property inspection report we've attached for the property, receive a status update from the staff, and discuss and consider options for future use of the property. As you saw in your package, we have received the report back from the home inspector who inspected the home back in December and assessed a number of items for the property and while this is one component of our understanding of and a data point, we look at it as such. There's a lot more options to research, we believe, and Ray D'Enzo is also going to share some of his thoughts in a moment. But we've outlined, as in the past, some of the options to consider in the report. But we do have several issues with and assets with that property we think that are worthy of investigating further. So with that, I will pass it over to Ray for his comments.
Good afternoon, Board. So I guess my comments for this was I am just looking forward to your recommendation. I think the recommendations that we've outlined here are good ways to go. I definitely have a recommendation that I hope that you would approve, but I don't know if that's appropriate for me to state at this time. So, I'll just say it anyway, and it can be discussed. But I think one of the challenges that we have for our community and for our specifically, I'm speaking, you know, for our utilities department, you know, we do want to be able to attract talent from different parts of the county. And one of the things that a big challenge for us is we have this recommendation typically of for on-call operators of being within 45 minutes of the plant. And that could be very challenging, okay, because a lot of us are right at the limit of 45 minutes. And I think if there was an option, if you will, an affordable housing option for staff that can be attracted, that we could have, you know, either for on-call, a place for on-call, and maybe a place where they could rent, you know, a place, you know, in the Van Gordon House, which would be an appropriate place to house them. That's close to the plant and available for to respond to the calls, whether it's on call or for emergencies. So, and I don't necessarily say that option number two, you know, renovate, and we have option number three, demolition. I think a direction for a combination of some of these things, you know, it's definitely something that I think it's worth investigating. So anyway, I'm looking forward to just hearing discussion on this and going with your whatever recommendation you decide. So.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ray. So let's just open this up for a discussion by the board and Vice President Steidel.
After having read the report, there seemed to be any number of significant things here that are safety hazards and concerns, as well as some issues with the cracks in the foundation and a lot of interior damage that would almost talk to demoing rather than trying to renovate it. But I guess what I'd like to understand is that there's an estimate in here, current repair costs are estimated about $170,000. I'd be curious to know if that number is still valid or whether we're talking about a significantly larger number as a result of the report, because the report is new.
Yeah, no, that 170 was the home inspector's estimate. Now, we did not take that out to contractors to get various prices, and that was just to repair the current house that sits there. Part of our thinking internal to staff is now that we know that there are pretty significant repairs to be done, demolition may be a way to go, but home construction has changed drastically in the last it changes even the last 5 to 10 years. But nowadays, you can get a factory-built home that's dropped on the location, already built, chandeliers hanging inside, and you just connect it to the utilities. We're on a slab there, so it's not a real significant issue there. But so that's just one option that we've been thinking about now that we have this initial report back. But there are other options. We have some of the assets we have there are we have two water meters there, our SCADA system that links into all the measuring and monitoring system for entire community is wired there already. That would be a significant issue for us to replicate something like that. So there are a number of pros for us to consider further, but this helped narrow our direction a little bit and how we're thinking about it. Does that answer your question?
Director Pearson.
A couple other things for you maybe to think about. Number one, Mr. Carmel, is it possible for us to hold an auction and sell this to the public after making it a public lot?
We'd have to deal with creating a lot for it, but subject to that, yeah, sure.
Okay. And if we were to demo this, would we need Coastal Commission's permission to demo?
Yes. You need a coastal development permit that will be appealable. It may not be appealed.
And the same thing with placing the new manufactured home, that would also have that same issue, right?
Right. Okay. It may stay at the county's level because that's not necessarily that controversial.
Right.
But it's subject to appeal.
Yeah. So all of these things need to be taken into consideration. And I think that it's a good idea for you guys to go back and think about it, especially that Ray's got some more ideas and maybe come back to us in another 4 months or something like that with a better plan. Thanks.
I have a request to speak on this item from Leslie Richards.
Leslie Richards, I am a resident. I was on Simpson Creek for the last 20 years with my business, and I knew the Spillmans. I knew the reason why they were evicted from the property because of repairs that had to be done in the house and liability issues. And when they were evicted from the property, I thought that one of the meters was sold at that time. So the question of two active services is kind of a surprise to me because I know that there is one active service that was discovered quite late in the game here recently. But the prior one supposedly went on the market already and was already sold. And it's in that area of time frame where we have kind of a dark window of information with the district. An example of that dark window of information in the district was the Orellana Drake Street transfer from Ivar. We had a clouded title at that point, and so in 2013, the previous CCSD board gave the general manager the right to override these questionable clouded title sites and just sign off on it, and the Coast Commission didn't allow that to go through. So I think we need to do a little more due diligence on the actual history of these two separate meters on site. I also support the idea of remodeling it for staff housing. The idea of demolishing this or selling it to private auction, you have an asset, you have a valuable asset here, you have staff that need housing. I think there's creative ways of bringing this site back online. I work in construction now. We just rehabbed a house in this kind of condition as well. It sounds like it's a huge endeavor, but $170,000 for a functional house is actually a good deal. So I hope that you will be cautious on the idea of what you want to do. I think that your district engineer has a great idea. I think the call time, the 45-minute travel time, it would be wonderful to have housing for staff on site. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Yes, Director Howell.
Interesting. As we go forward, a question for council that I would like to know is should we be using, if we use this as housing for our employees? I sense there may be some issues having to do with if we terminate an employment where the person is living in the house. I have a feeling that we might end up in a very, very difficult eviction proceeding. So I'd like a legal opinion later. It doesn't have to be today. But I sense that solution, as interesting as it sounds, may put the district into some very, very difficult legal problems, and I'm just a little bit nervous. That's why I'd like to have some clarity on that issue.
Yeah, I think there could be some bumps, but I don't think there's anything that's going to be insurmountable, but we'll go ahead and do that then.
Thank you.
For Director Howell, so the city of SLO already has housing for their their employees. So that certainly would be one area we want to understand how they do that, how those programs work, and et cetera, for all those issues.
May I turn to John? Yes. Could you possibly lay hold of some of the contracts that the city is using? Let's try to see how they're handling this.
Oh, it doesn't look like any further comment is being made here. Pardon me. All right. It's Vice President Steidel.
Rather than the idea of it being a single residence for someone associated with staff, are we talking more about kind of, for lack of a better term, kind of a bunkhouse environment? So it's on a rotating basis of whoever might need access because of their being on call for business, and you'd almost operate it in a way that some personal effects could be kept on site but have their own assigned space or whatever. It just a lot more functional than the idea of a singular assignment.
Absolutely. That's right in the meat of our discussions is, you know, thinking about it's not, you know, put this existing house aside. It's a property. And so one of the ideas we're kicking around is to have sort of a dormitory style where you have a common area, kitchen, living room, and with living spaces that are connected to that to accommodate, you know, 2-3 people, perhaps. We'd have to investigate what that entails.
Well, if nobody minds, I'd like to put in a comment or two. When I was considering this item here, what to do with this particular site, the first thing that popped into my head is, you know, what is there a lack of? What have had the various businesses in town been talking about? And that's the need for low-income housing in this community, because we have so many employees in the service industry that are having to leave the area because the rents are getting higher and there are fewer of them. So that was my first thought, is, like I say, providing low-income housing for people that work here. And with regard to the two water meters, if in fact that is the case, selling one of those water meters, and I realize somebody's out there can say, well, what are they going to do with that water meter? Build another 4,000 square foot house. But it would be nice to use the monies from that one water meter that we would sell and put it toward the new water storage tank on Stewart Street, which we're in need of. So those would be my suggestions as to what to do with that location. Do we need to pursue this item any further? Was this just open for discussion? Do we need to make a motion of some type? No, that's...
It was just receive the update.
Right, okay. All right. Well, I guess this will be an item for a future agenda item there as to how we move forward. Well, I think it appears that we are finished with... Yeah, yes, Director Howell.
Future agenda items?
Thank you. Any suggestions for future agenda items? Director Howell.
Yes. Catherine Ryan Hyde wrote a letter to the board. I'd like to have that brought to the board or some response be made to her. So can we bring that up soon?
With regard to the street light.
Yes, with regard to the street lighting.
Well, I think we'd already discussed that in... at a recent agenda meeting, so we'll have it on the agenda in March. You're welcome. Sure, go ahead.
Question, sorry, Mr. President. Has anyone responded back to Catherine Ryan Hyde that we are going to discuss it? It seems to me perhaps that would be in order.
I'll contact her.
Okay, thanks.
We're old friends.
Good.
Well, seeing no further future agenda items, I believe this... All right, what have I done wrong, Director Pearson?
No. I at some point in time, and it doesn't have to be necessarily discussed today, but maybe next week, we do need to schedule a town hall to get the strategy plan and all that kind of thing going.
We had when we had the last agenda meeting, we were going to put this on the agenda for the first meeting in March. So we haven't, it's not that we haven't been thinking about it.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing it up. All right. Any further comments, remarks? No? All right. So this meeting is adjourned, and we will adjourn to closed session. Anybody that would like to make a
15 minutes.
Make a public comment on closed session? Seeing none, we will adjourn to closed session. Everybody have a really nice Valentine's Day. If you have someone to love in your life, give them a big squeeze, and just remember, it's not just one day a year, okay? Thank you.
The closed session is agenda item 8.
Thank you. Thank you.